Fresh off of retirement from the NFL, a seven-year career, the only man selected in the 2016 NFL draft from the Iowa Hawkeyes, Austin Blythe joins the show. Incredible episode today, talking to an old friend, an old teammate, a great Hawkeye. Hope you guys enjoy this one. As always, sit back, relax, and let's have a day. Let's go.
We're back. This used to be the Wash Buckman's podcast, but now it's the Friendship Podcast. Kluver's not here because he's putting his daughter to sleep. He said he'll be here in, you know, as shortly as he can. We're here with a fantastic guest, newly retired guest from a hell of a career in the NFL. Former captain of ours, always will be a guy that we look up to as that leader. A guy that I've definitely go to battle with. Austin Blythe, welcome back to the podcast, and it's always a pleasure to talk to you, man.
It's great coming back. It's crazy what you guys have done. I don't remember. I was before episode 100, wasn't I? And now you guys are on 400 something.
Yeah, it's like 400.
It's been a wild ride, man. But yeah, you were at least 300 episodes ago.
Yeah,
and it's so stupid that we still have this podcast, but here we are.
No, it's not stupid at all. You guys do it. You guys, like you said, it's a quality show.
Yeah, that's honestly debatable. But so you just hung up the cleats, man. What's been new for you for the last few months?
You know, not too much new yet. It's been, I guess, the last few weeks, the off-season programs have started. So that's been a little change, not reporting for those. But, you know, not having to lift every day. Not being upset when I don't get a workout in is a nice change, and just allows for a lot of flexibility and time given back to Kylie and the kids. So it's been very, very nice so far.
How much harder is it to be a full-time dad than a player?
Way harder.
Yeah. Way harder. You don't have that escape.
Yeah, exactly. It can't be like, hey, Kylie, I got to jump on this flight to go play a game and, you know, chill in the hotel for a few hours by myself. See ya. I don't have that anymore.
You know, I remember listening to McAfee's podcast, and he would talk about, like, guys report for camp. And, like, you know, the young guys are, like, bitching, complaining about sleeping in the hotel and stuff. And, like, some of the vets are like, dude, this is the best sleep I get all year.
Clearly don't have kids. You know, camp is a great time. Especially now, they've got all the rules and stuff in where it's like the ramp up period, the acclimatization period, or whatever. And I probably just butchered that word, but yeah, camp is beautiful these days in the NFL.
Where did you do your camps at? Did you guys do them at colleges or?
So in Indianapolis, we did it at a Division III school. LA was at UC Irvine. Kansas City was Northwest Missouri State. And then Seattle was they did it at home, which was nice. So,
you know, it kind of brings me to my next point. Been around the block a little bit, huh?
Yes.
What was it like going from, like, you know, a sixth round draft pick, correct?
Seventh
round draft
pick. Only pick of the year, too. We almost didn't have one.
Yep. I saved the streak.
Saved the day.
Just best by a team few only picks. Got one pick, too. Yeah. What was it like going from, like, a seventh round draft pick to forging an eight-year career in the NFL?
And winning a Super Bowl, dude.
Didn't get one.
You didn't get one?
Thanks, though.
Damn, I'm sorry, bro. I thought you were on the team, the Rams team that won it.
Yep, I missed a Super Bowl both in LA and in Kansas City by 1 year. So
each damn, year, I thought you were on that Rams team. That's, you know, that's a low blow by me.
Obviously, hindsight is always 20/20. I turned down an offer to go back to LA, albeit a horrible offer coming off a really pretty good year in 2020. And I decided to go to Kansas City for, you know, the same money, but obviously it's not because of taxes and all that good stuff and not having to live in LA. So I made that decision. And obviously I wish I wouldn't have, given how my year in Kansas City went and the Rams obviously won. But it was good to see all the guys that I played with and I'm still friends with, win that one, obviously, but, it's going to be such a shitty feeling if, you know, I decided to retire after 1 year in Seattle, and Seattle's got a good team, this year. So you never know. If I miss a Super Bowl 3 years in a row by 1 year, I'm, you know, man, I don't even know what I'd do.
That would be, that might get you back out of retirement, huh?
Yeah, it might. It might. I'll be like, hey, or just, you know, pump that as a marketing for myself. Like, hey, I'll play for you for 1 year. You pay me a lot of money, and then the next year you'll win the Super Bowl.
You're winning the Super Bowl guaranteed because my track record is 100%.
Yep.
Dude, talk about that Seattle team, because Geno Smith had a hell of a year out of, like, nowhere. Like, he's been around the league for 10, 12 years now, right?
At this point, I can't remember. You know, he's over 10, or right at 10 maybe.
Right, like he gets drafted by the Jets, I think. Doesn't really work out because, you know, that's where careers go to die. But, you know, kind of just rides it out and then just has a great year out of nowhere.
Yeah, it wasn't, you know, it was surprising on one hand just being a fan or a player in the NFL, knowing Geno's path and how he's kind of bounced around just like I have. And then he gets a chance last year or 2 years ago, I guess, when Russell broke his finger or whatever, and he came in and he did fine. I thought he, from an outside perspective, I thought he played really well. Just not a great cast around him, I guess. Or they didn't play as well as they did because of a lot of the same pieces this year. But the way he played and performed this year was not a surprise at the same time because of how I saw him compete in camp and prepare in camp and then week to week in the season. I mean, he was on it. He was dialed in. The guys around him were dialed in. And, you know, it helps when Lockett's playing well, when DK's playing well, and then we've got that rookie running back. You know, unfortunately, Rashad Penny broke his leg, and he was having a great start to his year. And then, you know, Ken comes in and just – out of nowhere just is breaking ankles and scoring touchdowns. So
he was an animal. He was like a fantasy playmaker.
Yeah.
Guys
he was.
Won their leagues because of him.
Yep. I know it doesn't surprise me though either. Cause like he's that typical Michigan State runner where he's got a lot of patience and then he hits the hole and
very physical.
Finds daylight and then just scores. So it was a lot of fun playing there. Not only because of the year we had, but the organization and the coaches that are on the staff there, it's just an elite atmosphere and just place to go to work. I mean, you go into the team meeting room every day. It's probably about at least a 45 minute team meeting, and it's you're shooting hoops against each other, you're hooting and hollering, you're watching all kinds of videos. It's so
You've
much.
You've never heard of Pete Carroll meetings, Kevin?
Well, I mean, I remember watching the USC 30 for 30, and he had Will Ferrell and Snoop Dogg like would come to practice all the time, but I didn't know like he was doing this in the middle of team meetings.
It's the same kind of stuff. Literally, you put 30, like, you know, a highlight, a wide receiver and a cornerback are John back and forth the day before in practice. He shows it as a highlight for one of the guys, and then as a redemption, they go up and shoot 30 seconds on you know, free throws or something, and it's a hoop right in the team meeting room, right on stage, and you know, they go for 30 seconds, and you know, a lot of bricks go up, but it's very, very entertaining. And it's a massive juxtaposition from Andy Reid and Kansas City's team meetings. I mean, you were in and out in maybe 60 seconds. So it
that's
totally
a big juxtaposition of KF's team meetings also.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Yeah. You knew when you're walking into KF's team meeting and you got the tape pulled up, you know, you're in for a long one. I don't know.
I just got a handful of clips here. We're just going to go.
Yeah.
Clips
here. Yeah. And then 30 clips later, you know, an hour later, you're walking out.
All right. So that's, I think we'll cut the clips here. I just got a couple more points here.
yeah. That's exactly right.
Oh man, I actually do miss listening to KF speak on a weekly basis though. The dude is just a wealth of wisdom. But
yeah, and he could pull back from the 90s, you know.
No, my favorite, honestly, when he would pull back from when he like GA'd at Pittsburgh days, like when he's pulling back from like the 70s and like before he was even an Iowa coach.
And I think that's a mark of a good coach. I mean, just being able to pull that kind of knowledge from everywhere is something all the good ones do.
Have you seen the clips of McVay doing that?
Yeah.
Just straight out of his brain. Those are impressive.
Yep. I played in some of the clips I've seen, he's referenced games that I've been a part of, and I'm like, no clue. Nope.
So, you know, you played it for a lot of different coaches and a lot of different styles. What do you feel like there's a specific style out there that breeds the most success or gets the most out of their players? Or is it just kind of whatever works for each program, each guy, each team, do you feel like?
Yeah, I think there's similarities between the successful organizations and cultures. I think there's a line that the good ones, the great organizations, the perennial success, successful seasons, there's a fine line between letting guys be themselves and have fun and be loose and all that good stuff at the same time getting your work done and doing it at a high level. I think when coaches and teams have that kind of freedom to do that stuff, you know, it's like any job that, you know, their workplace, how that, you know, how your employees feel about the workplace. Is it fun? Is it relaxing? Can you be yourself? And generally those people that those workplaces, you know, they perform, they earn success, and it's really no different for football. If you let guys show who they are, have fun doing it, but at the same time, being firm enough to get your work done when you need to, is really, I think, the mark of any good organization. You know, I think the team or the example opposite of that that's popping into my head is the Giants when Joe Judge was the coach. Mm-hmm. You can't do that in the NFL. I mean, you're dealing with, for the most part, you're dealing with grown men, professionals. You can't treat them like college kids anymore. And I feel like that probably happens more than not, obviously.
It, for the fans listening who may not be familiar, was he like a really strict type guy? Is like, you know, like takes no bullshit and like really by the letter of the law type guy or what?
Who's that? Joe Judge?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I think one story I've heard is, you know, he makes guys do up downs just for doing up downs. Like, it's obvious if guy gets in trouble, he's late, he's breaks a law, whatever. If he does, yeah, that's one thing, which still is probably a stretch for a grown man to make them do up downs. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people in the locker rooms, a lot of pro players in the locker rooms aren't going to like that. But another story is, you know, he's a guy that preaches, you know, being on time, being prompt, being ready. And he would constantly show up 10 minutes late, 20 minutes late, 30 minutes late to team meetings. Yes. That blew my mind. It's a story from a fellow Hawkeye. So
he got ran out of that organization quick. They weren't having that.
Yep.
What else are you doing? you're the head coach. What else are you doing, man?
No doubt. I don't know. You'd think you'd have your priorities lined up enough where you could get to your own team meeting that you set on time.
That's absolutely wild. And yeah, I guess that makes sense, right? It's like once you get it to the NFL, it's like, yeah, you'll have some young guys who like came out of college early that are like 21 to 23. But majority of the team is 25 years old, older, right? It's like you're starting to deal with grown-ass men, right? So they're not going to take to the physical.
Grown-ass men who make more money than you.
Well, that and like you, real life still happens even though you play football. You get married, right. You have kids, your kids get sick, whatever comes up you need to deal with. And that's the coaches that I've really respected the most is those coaches who will be, you know, something comes up like this year, for instance, we played in Kansas City right before Christmas on Christmas Eve, at noon. It was a noon kickoff. And I was like, hey, Pete, can I, you know, just drive on up to Williamsburg after the game? He's like, yep, no problem. See you on Monday, or when do we go back to work? Monday. See you on Monday. So I spent Christmas here in Iowa for the first time in years. So so that sort of stuff, I think it probably helped that I was, you know, 7 years in, but, you know, a young guy's probably not going to get away with that. But, you know, stuff comes up. Hey, I got to take my kid to the doctor, or, you know, Kyle and I have been through our fair share of IVF stuff, and coaches have always been good about those kinds of appointments. So that stuff happens, and the good coaches understand that and, you know, allow for that sort of stuff to happen. And if you don't, you're going to lose your locker room really fast. And I think that's kind of what happened.
Yeah. What's the most well-run organization you played for? Because you played for McVay, who's a super new school guy. Andy Reid's old school. Pete Carroll's kind of like the one of the more unique coaches to ever have coached. Like a bunch of different organizations.
Yeah, you know, again, I think the Rams and the Seahawks organization are probably run the most similar of the ones that I've been a part of. Kansas City is one of those organizations. It was kind of unique there. I think so. Andy Reid, he's got a really loose sense of, I don't know how to describe it. It's really hard to describe because he's firm at practice. He doesn't let a lot of stuff slide, but at the same time, guys are super loose, having fun, you know, that sort of thing. And Coach Reid is not like, he's a serious dude. Like, he's not joking around. He doesn't crack many jokes. When he does, it's super dry, that sort of thing. But then, you know, Sean, he's a young guy. He came in, kind of changed. I think he was the innovator of how organizations kind of switched. You know, practices aren't, you know, beat you down, nail you into the dirt, break you down to build you back up sort of thing. So I think he kind of started that, which was a lot of fun, kind of ruined me for other places. Cause you,
that's gotta be the best feeling ever though.
Yeah. Once you're there, yeah.
You know, you'd have two padded practices and then, you know, the next day would be just helmets. Clue.
Awesome. My man, what's up? Apologies. I'm a part of that dad life now. So,
I appreciate that. It makes me feel good.
Lauren's coaching some volleyball. So it was, dad got bedtime.
Yep. I understand that fully.
How's dad life for you?
Good, really good. So, like I said, I put my kids down, and this is why we're doing it so late. So,
nice, love it.
Yeah, it's good.
Anyway, now, your oldest is like almost five now, right? That's a little early for bedtime, no?
My oldest is almost seven now.
Oh, Jesus, man.
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
Is he putting the pads on yet?
I don't know if I'm going to let him.
Really? No?
Seriously.
Well, I mean, not this early. Well, obviously, like when he gets to junior high, yeah, he'll play if he wants to play. But all that youth football stuff, there's so many like bad techniques and fundamentals. Like
you're right. There really is no benefit to playing.
Teach them the rules, teach them positions, all that stuff. But they don't need to tackle. They don't need to hit each other.
Yeah. Don't let me interrupt you. You were talking about something about getting
organizations. Yeah.
You're getting shoved in the dirt. I heard something about getting shoved in the dirt or something like that.
I wasn't personally, but you know, Sean McVay started that kind of train, I feel like, of practices kind of being a little bit laid back. You wear those the GPS monitors that, you know, tell guys how far they ran, how fast, how much explosive actions they took, how much, you know, force they met with other people and all that good stuff.
You always looked good in the bra at Iowa, I thought.
Well, thanks, man.
GPS bra.
That's the only time I ever wore them. I didn't have to wear them after that.
They didn't have you in GPS?
No, they did, so they put them in the back of your jerseys. I guess technology has come a long ways, apparently. But yeah, so he was kind of the innovator for all that stuff. You know, their medical staff, training staff really worked kind of in tandem with the strength staff and the coaches to be like, hey, practices would be dialed back this day, blah, 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 all that sort of stuff. Then you go to Kansas City, and we're running 80 to 90 plays every practice, 100 plays in camp. And it's brutal. Not obviously every string's not running that many, but it's like a cumulative 80, 90 plays every day. Doesn't matter what day it is. Could be the middle of the season, camp, whatever it is. So I went there, and then you go back to Seattle, and Seattle's kind of the Sean McVay school type. Hey, we're going to take care of guys, which personally I think you need to do, because if your best guys can't be on the field, aren't feeling good, you're not going to win games, especially in the NFL. The parity is margin of error is just too small in the NFL. Everybody's good. So if your best guys aren't feeling good, aren't playing good, you know, what's the point of practicing hard? You know, as hard as you can still practice hard, but you can do it in a smart way. So
KF always used to say, we need our best guys playing the best.
Mm. Exactly. And that carries on at any level. But the best organization that I felt like I played for was Seattle. And I don't know if that's like recency bias or what it is, but I just had a ton of fun. It wasn't work. I'd go in, you know, I had for the first time in a lot of years, I played in Seattle going to work thinking like, all right, you know, I'm going to go to work. I'm going to have a good day, where I had a lot more of those days than days where like, oh wow, this sucks. Like I don't want to be here. Like I can't wait to be done, that sort of thing. So that was the first time. This year was the first time in a long time that I had a lot of fun, had, you know, more of those days than not. So
I got a question for you. You know, being an 8-year NFL vet, right?
Seven. You know,
7-year NFL vet.
I don't give myself too much credit.
You pussy.
We'll give you 8. If you want an extra inch, we'll give it to you, bud.
You've got 7. You've got infinity more than us 3 combined.
So we always used to break down a whole lot of like our workouts, our practices of like, you know, like you called up and like you break it down. Let's go to work, right? It's like, hey, let's get after it. Let's go to work. Let's grind. And then once you're in the NFL, it's like, actually, this is my job. Let's go to work. Does it ever start to feel like actual work, like a job's like, hey, I got to go do this thing? Or like, is it still a game 7 years later in the NFL? Like, you know, you retired at what? What are you, 30?
30.
So you've been playing this game for 20 years, right?
Old man.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'll go back to my point that I made about, you know, guys now in the NFL that you get married, you have kids, all that sort of stuff. Yeah, we're still playing a game, but at the same time, when kids aren't feeling good at home, your wife's going through stuff, your wife's making all the sacrifices for you to play a game, like that stuff impacts your life and your train of thought. Like, so there are many times in my career where it was, yes, I have to go to work. I don't have a choice here. Kind of, and I say that's way dramatic, but you know, I got to go to work. Like I can't deal with this right now. You know, so there is an element to, yeah, you're playing a game, but at the same time you are performing a job and it is your livelihood at this point. So, yeah, it's a unique, kind of two-sided coin,
sure.
With football. Know,
going back to my first question before Drake decided to stick a needle on you, what's that like?
Listen,
you
know, to this, like, dude, I thought he won a Super Bowl with the Rams.
No, Drake.
Yes,
he did.
No,
it's so good that you're not the first person, Drake. You're not the first person.
Hey, you won't be the last. Does it make you feel horrible that Gervais won a Super Bowl with the Rams?
No, any hawk that gets a ring is, you know, is good in my book. But yes, it stings. It stung a lot.
Fucking Jake Gervais, okay? Holy shit!
Not that Jake won. I'm happy for Jake. Obviously,
I'm not.
We are not.
It stung a lot the way that I exited that organization, and then especially followed up by my year in Kansas City, how that went for me.
Yeah.
It did. It was some sour grapes for sure.
Kevin, you can continue in a second. I think this will be a quick answer.
Yeah,
but
I just go fuck myself. It's all right.
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, take one of those fucking awards that you won that's on display and just shove that right
up your ass.
Yeah, shove it up your ass real quick. No,
what is an exquisite looking office, Kevin?
Oh, dude, he's the CEO of Stryker. I mean,
I gotta look the part, man. Gotta look the part.
Fake have it you got the, I don't know if you guys have mentioned this, but Kev has the mustache rolling right now.
Look, I haven't even noticed.
Holy, yeah, I gotta change things up every now and then, right?
Special mic.
You said this last season, the seventh season, was finally the season where you woke up and had a ton of days. It was a much bigger disparity of, I feel like I'm going and just playing a game, like I get to live free, instead of saying, I got to go to work today. When did you, and they may have already asked you this because I'm an asshole and jumped in late, but when did you know that this was the last year? And did that
make your days more positive?
Well, did it make your days more positive? But then also, did you have thoughts of like, well, shit, if this is the way it's going to be, maybe I could do one or two more years, right?
Yeah. So we went into this year in Seattle knowing pretty well that it was going to be my last year. After my year in 2020 with the Rams, you know, still the effects of COVID were being felt by the entire league. Salary cap was down, and I just hit free agency at a terrible point, because I felt like I played my best ball in 2020, had a really good year playing center, first full year playing position that I thought I was drafted for, that I thought I would always play, only play in the league. And year five, I finally got a chance to play that position 100% of the time. And I thought I played really well, had a great year. I was going to go into free agency, either getting a good deal to return with the Rams, or, you know, playing out the rest of my career on a 2-3-4 year deal somewhere else with good money. But obviously COVID happened, salary cap got screwed. You know, the Rams offered me a shit 3-year deal with, you know, the illusion of a decent contract, but the guaranteed money was just not great. Turned that down, obviously. They offered me a 1-year deal, veteran minimum, which is still a lot of money, but a slap in the face for 4 years in the organization, playing a lot of good football for them. And, you know, I said, screw you. I went and signed the same deal, vet minimum, with a little bit of an incentive with the Chiefs that I thought I was going to hit, because it was a playtime incentive. And at the time when I signed, they didn't have anybody on the roster. And when they signed me, they're like, yep, you're going to have good shot to snap to Patrick Mahomes, blah, blah, blah. Great. It was a team I grew up rooting for, Kansas City. And it was a no brainer. You know, I was super happy to get back to the Midwest, 4 hours from home. Kylie and the kids could go back and forth if they wanted to, as much as they wanted to, rather than a 9-hour travel day, connecting flights, all that good stuff. You know, who wouldn't make that decision, right? Kansas City's primed to make Super Bowl runs year in and year out. Who wouldn't make that decision? But
I'd make the same choice.
Right, exactly. Draft rolls around, they take a center with their first pick in the draft, or second pick in the draft, whatever it was. And, you know, I'm thinking, okay, you know, it's competition. You know, I've never shied away from competition. Yeah, they drafted a kid that high. They probably expect to start. But at the same time, if I get a shot, I feel like I'll be able to show that I am still the better option. Never even got a chance. Any promise of a competition was just a false promise. I started.
Isn't that so fucked?
It is. It is. Like, I didn't take any first team reps with the first. I didn't take any first team reps with Joe Tooney, Orlando Brown, Patrick Mahomes, all those guys, until it was backup reps. You know, getting me ready for a game, and that was probably halfway during the season. And even then, it was 2-3 reps during the week that I would take with the ones. You know.
I think that's one of the shittiest parts of, and I never had to deal with this, and it's hard coming from my mouth because it's not like I dealt with a whole lot of this, but I watched it happen. I got a lot of time to watch this happen to a lot of guys. Mm-hmm. And like even in college, they promise like these position battles, right? So occasionally it happened at kicker. And I actually think at the specialist position, maybe because sometimes our special teamers were performing like ass. They were just kicking like dog shit. There actually was a competition. But at other positions, like they promise, like, you're going to get a shot. You're going to get your reps. And if you prove you can do it, you'll be the guy. But almost all the time, I feel like the coaches want to be the guy, more often than not, ends up being the guy. Like, it's just... Yeah. And I'm sure you saw that a lot in the NFL. Obviously, it happened to you. So it's like,
yeah. And I will say, like, obviously the guy that they drafted, Creed Humphrey, he's a great player. He's an All-Pro this year. He's been in the Pro Bowl, whatever. But the fact, when I got to camp, I started taking reps at left guard, a position I hadn't, I think I had maybe 100 snaps in the league playing that during games. I was either a right guard or playing center. And you're gonna try and tell me, sit there and tell me that I'm in a competition when I'm taking majority of the reps at left guard behind Joe Tooney, who's a perennial Pro Bowl player? No, like, get out of here. So to answer your, I'd say all that to answer your question. You know, I thought Kansas City was gonna be my last stop. I thought I was gonna go in, I was gonna get the starting job, earn the starting job. I was gonna play well. I was gonna earn another contract, and I was gonna finish that out with the Kansas City Chiefs. And I was gonna retire a Chief. Dream come true. Growing up a Chiefs fan. Bing bang boom. You know, like, done. Go home right off into the sunset. Year went horrible. You know, the only saving grace I'll say is the guys in the room. A lot of good dudes in the room. You know, made friendships with all the guys in every organization, but you know, the Chiefs were no different. So those guys really probably saved my aspirations of playing more football. But also just wanting to get that taste out of my mouth. I wanted to play at least another year. And I got the chance to go back up to Seattle with a couple coaches that were in LA when I was. I had a really good relationship with them. Actually, during the season in Kansas City, I told the assistant O-line coach in LA, who was the run game coordinator in Seattle prior to being the O-line coach this last year, I texted him and I said, hey, if you need guard help, center help, you know, come get me. Or tell me you need me and I'll be like, hey, cut me and I'll figure something out, whatever. He's like, you know, gave me the runaround, coach speak, whatever. But it's funny how things work. I ended up there, obviously, this year with those guys and had a ton of fun. Played a lot of good football.
Did Pete Carroll get you a free house?
No. Oh. But it's funny. In team meetings, some of that stuff came up because, like, that's how team meetings are. Like, people just giving shit to each other, including the head coach.
Older guys
in the room, like, we're talking about, he still loves USC. Pete does.
Oh, yeah.
And rightfully so. Like, he grew up in the Bay and went down and coached at USC and just loved it. And somebody said some alluding to the fact that, you know, blah, blah, blah. And he didn't deny it, you know, that sort of thing, which is funny. He'd be stupid to not believe some of that stuff went on while he was there. But
well, and I think at this point that specific situation is pretty much out in the air. Like, it's very clear that Reggie got, like, him and his mom both got, like, a car and his mom got a house.
I mean, he lost his husband for it. So, I mean, it's all but confirmed. Like,
hey, fuck it. We won national championship.
Yeah. Reggie and Matt Lyons.
I used to, not knowing Pete, I hated him. Playing in LA, obviously, played the Seattle Seahawks twice a year. Even, you know, growing up, watching him at USC. But I don't know if there's a coach that I love more than Pete at this point. I mean, he's been awesome. He was awesome. And, you know, I called him and told him that I was retiring. And he's like, oh, man, you know, that's hard to hear, but at the same time, I understand, like, you got a family, blah, blah, blah. Anytime you want to come back, you're like family. Do you know, appreciate what you did, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, I mean, it probably, that doesn't happen everywhere, I'm sure. You know, it certainly, I don't think, would have happened in Kansas City, with all due respect to that staff and organization, but it just doesn't compare to Seattle, in my opinion.
Wow. That's awesome stuff, man.
It's cool. Yeah. It was very rewarding. So, and then you get to the end of the season and Kylie and I are like, man, you know, it felt like this is the first place where you were truly appreciated. Guys wanted you on the team, you know, calling everybody, telling I was retiring. Like, it was just hard for them to hear, blah, blah, blah. Do we really want to retire? Do we try and play another, you know, that sort of thing. But then it was like, I don't know how you can, Reed is, like I said, he's almost seven. He's very aware of every time I leave and it's just, you know, all that sort of stuff. And he's getting into grade school now. And we always said that we want to be done with that. Time came around and I had a 7-year career, had a ton of fun doing it, and you know, not much more to accomplish. And if you chase a Super Bowl, that's how you end up playing for 15 years, you know.
Yeah,
and I wouldn't be halfway through if I played that long.
Yeah, the one thing for me,
what if you guys play for Pete?
Yeah, I mean, those practices and the way he runs the program, I could probably make it several more years, but
You got to have 16 bad days, 16 hard days, not bad days, just or 17 hard days of work. And then the playoffs are like, I can only imagine that's one of the coolest experiences of all time.
Yeah, it was. I mean, I've been lucky enough to play in 6 or 7 postseasons. So a lot of good teams.
Start thinking about them game checks. And you're like, fuck, I really have to give those up.
I love the Seahawks after this podcast is over.
You don't have to
tell Pete to call us. You're welcome, Pete.
You'll negotiate for me?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. What day did the game checks hit?
It changed. So when the new CBA went into effect, it's every week now for 34 weeks. And before that, and then before that, it was just one huge check for 17 weeks, which I appreciate.
How long did it take to get used to that?
What's that?
Just that kind of money. Like, professional sports is a wild.
It was definitely rewarding because, like, in college, obviously, back when we were in school, or when I was in school, I mean, we played with all you guys, but I think the monthly check was $950 or something like that.
It
bumped up a little bit after you left.
After I left, yeah.
By the time we were seniors, it was about $1,600 a month.
Okay, maybe it got up.
It was closer to $2,000. Yeah,
it was maybe it was $1,800 a month or something like that. Yeah.
Well, that's nice. That's nice. But yes, going to Indianapolis my first year and getting those checks, it was like, wow, this is nuts. I mean, this is part of the reason why you
is this real? Is this Monopoly money? Who's punking?
That's part of the dream of playing NFL, right? Is being able to afford all the things that you want to, and definitely been very blessed to have done it for 7 years. So
it's such a weird when I think about it. You have a job where people can like look up how much you make, right? And obviously there's taxes involved in that, but people know that you over the course of your career have made several million dollars, right? And that's just weird to a lot of people to think about. For a lot of kids, I still feel like I'm a kid at 28, even though mine is sleeping upstairs.
In the same way,
you think about that kind of money, and you're just like, fuck, like I can do anything I want. But it's just I imagine that takes a while to get used to. And then like you hear about all the guys who all these professional athletes who just blow through it, and they are broke and bankrupt like a couple years later. For the fans, not so much for us, but like for you, how did you think about that, and how did you financially budget and kind of make sure that like did you have a plan going into that? You don't have to go into specifics, but I'm just curious.
Yeah, you know,
did you have things you wanted to do with it entrepreneurially? I know you have the hunting kind of business, or how do you even describe that you guys run down there? And
yeah, so I guess the way that I always looked at it, you know, my family's been lucky and blessed enough to have been financially successful prior to my NFL career.
And I heard about that. Yeah.
Yep. So, and I think that, you know, at this point it's,
I'm being an asshole. I heard
playing in Iowa, you know, people Google your name and all that stuff. So it's been, people know that, and it's, I don't know if it's public knowledge, but my family's financially successful, and I always wanted to make my own way by playing in the NFL. And, lucky for me that I had been around a little bit of it and, saw the benefits that this kind of money can afford somebody. And, we've really tried to save as much as we could to afford myself the opportunity to not have to work in retirement.
Yeah.
And, the idea and the opportunity to run a hunting business in retirement came to me and my father-in-law, Kylie's dad, in 2018. And we bought that with, earnings in the NFL. And it's been taking off like crazy. We're doing really well. We're in our, 2018 to now? Fifth year of operation now. And, things are, I guess we're going to go under what, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22. Yeah. So our sixth year of operation this fall. And it's just been, you know, it's been a blessing to be able to have that set up while I was still playing and making money, to have this at a point where it can support, you know, help support Kyle and I, not having to work in retirement. So
how cool is it? The idea of you having total freedom of your time to watch your kids grow up every moment. That's so fucking sick.
Yeah, that was a huge goal of mine, and I'm super, super lucky to be able to do that now. That is my reality now. You know,
it's so cool.
It's awesome. I can coach as much or as little as I want. I can take them to school, pick them up from school. I can, you know, go to every single one of their sporting events, any other special event, dance for my girls, and gymnastics, whatever it may be, you know, I can be there for that. And that's, you know, part of what my motivation was to play as long as I did. And also a huge reason why I decided to stop when I did.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Fuck. Is the entrepreneurial spirit alive in you more than just the hunting business? Do you want to do more stuff, or have you thought about that?
I do, actually. So
good. Then I got a pitch for you, Blythe. You got a pitch for you.
Okay. All right.
You and the Paulsons make an outdoor show that is also a cooking show, because they're phenomenal cooks of game and they love to hunt too. I'm telling you.
I know.
We pitched it to them about 2 days ago.
Well, I already got on Landon a couple years ago now, whenever he bought his place in Kelowna, which is probably 30 minutes away from Williamsburg, less from where our hunting club is. I'm like, Landon, what are you doing? Buy a house in Williamsburg. Like, you need to, whenever you get married and start having, he wasn't engaged or married at this point. Whenever you get married and start having kids, they need to be in the Williamsburg school district. Like, think of how much fun that would be. And he's like, oh yeah. And then I find out he bought the house in Kelowna. I gave him so much shit. I'm like, man, I need to get you up to Williamsburg eventually. Him and Levi too. I mean, both of them.
I don't know, man. They seem to really be all in on Kelowna. They're
town. They're gonna be the fucking mayors of that town within, I don't know, 18 months.
They converted to Amish.
The first mayor tandem in the history of politics.
Reminds me of that Always Sunny scene. It's like, we're only hiring one person. It's like, oh no, we're interviewing together. We'll do it for same salary for two brothers
is what I was thinking. The Pan situation.
Yeah. That's totally those two, but yeah, doing something with those guys could be fun for sure. But to answer your question,
Williamsburg have a volunteer fire department?
They do.
Oh, okay. Well, then you.
Williamsburg's a bigger community than Kelowna, so maybe I can convince them to come up eventually.
You're gonna have to put on your recruiting hat.
I can.
And
do
you
it.
Might. And you know what? You can give Pete a call because he is well at doing that too. You could get some tips. You could just buy them basically.
Yeah. Throw out a few dollars.
Yeah, go on about your next venture, potentially.
Yeah, I don't know if it's too much of a venture, but more of like a side hustle type slash hobby. I've always, you know, told people if I was dog shit at football, didn't go to college, I would have went into some sort of trade, you know, electrician, carpentry, plumbing, something. So because I enjoy figuring out how things work, putting things together, taking them apart, whatever. So I would love to buy a house at some point and try and flip it. There's a ton of beautiful, like, four square houses in Williamsburg that are older, need some love. So maybe, you know, at one point, if I can convince Kylie, maybe when the kids are a little bit older and they're starting to get into school full time, I'll try my hand at real estate. So we'll see.
Fuck it. Just build your own house.
Yeah, actually, we just moved into our place that is 2 years in the making, a week ago. So,
you actually build it with your own hands.
I would love. That's what I'm saying. Like, I would love to build, and maybe not from the ground up, but buy a house, tear it down to the studs, and just redo it and make it look beautiful.
That'd be sick. That would be sick.
You still talk to Simmons? He's still into the big into the woodworking.
Yes, he's actually building me a table or a bar for my new place. So.
Eric Simmons.
He's also doing a complete
addition on his house in Cedar Falls. It's insane.
And he's doing it obviously because he's
good. Yeah.
Boys, I forgot about Simmons.
Big shout out
on the show.
We should have him on. It would be interesting guy. And I love that guy. He
fucking legend.
Yeah, he's one of the guys that we've stayed in constant contact with.
He's so funny.
He is. He is a hoot. And he's still the same guy. Immature, stupid jokes that you can't help but laugh at. Like, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Does he still have long blonde hair?
He does.
Oh.
Well, I ran into him outside the airport randomly one day. I was like,
yeah.
Simmons. Yeah. He's like, Ward, what's up?
It's unreal.
Yeah, he's it
was like, it was a 15-minute or 15-second conversation. It was like, it's like the scene out of Dumb and Dumber. It's like, yeah. Oh, Ben Gilps.
Yeah.
See you later.
Yeah. He's another guy that I've tried to get to Williamsburg. I'd be like, hey, man, we'll come. We'll start a woodworking business together, blah, blah, blah. He's like, no.
No.
All right. At this point, dude, you've invited a lot of people to come live in Williamsburg. I'm kind of offended that we have not gotten an invite.
Kevin, yeah, I mean, come live in Williamsburg.
Well, Dave, Williamsburg's a nice spot.
You're engaged now. Bring your fiance over. I'll show you the town, the schools, the amenities.
I heard they got a nice golf course over there.
Beautiful golf course.
Kev, you want to know what?
Tanner Miller. Ask Tanner Miller about it.
I will. Yeah.
Kev, I could actually see you 100% in Williamsburg.
100% I could see this happening. Yeah.
It feels like you're a Williamsburg guy.
Buy a house right next to Blythe.
Maybe.
That's right.
You guys could coach on the high school staff. Just you and then you guys, you know, like Regina, they have a whole staff of former Hawks. You guys could just
Get Travis Perry's married to Williamsburg girl. I'm trying to get them back to town. You know?
Tuna?
Big tune.
Yeah. Big tune.
Yeah.
We gotta have Travis back on.
Conglomerate of Hawks, you know?
Yeah. There's not a whole lot of people that stay around like I live in Corville right now, but there's not a whole lot of people that stay like here. But there's still a bunch of Hawks peppered around Eastern Iowa.
I'm trying to make Williamsburg Kinnick West.
Okay.
The hub?
That's right.
It's like
every dude's dream though. Hold on, Kluver. Moving all your friends to the same city just hanging out forever. That's every kid's dream.
And then all your kids dominate on the same sports teams?
I mean, everybody's talked about that since they were like 10 years old.
That's fast.
That's the dream right there.
Yeah, I'm trying to bring that dream to life.
Hey, it's Peter Harmon, the food guru, here to talk about Gray's Gourmet To Go. At Gray's Gourmet To Go, we are madly and passionately in love with three things: chicken lips, pizza, and great food to go. Chicken lips are the most beloved food in Iowa City. And if you don't know what a chicken lip is, you're really missing out. Our second passion is pizza. We're hell-bent on making great pizza. Yeah, you can get cheap pizza anywhere. But if you're a real pizza aficionado, you gotta try our meatball pizza. It's made with a natural starter. And like sourdough bread, it's soft and crispy and light as air. And the third thing that we're wildly and passionately in love with is great food to go. We believe you want to feed your family something great at home, but you're too busy with life to stop and cook. That's why we built Gray's Gourmet To Go. So the next time you need to feed the gang and you don't feel like cooking, just come to graysgourmettogo.com.
Quick break to give some love to one of our biggest partners right now. That's right. You guessed it. Pork. Bacon, ground pork, ham, pork roast, pork belly, ribs, pork loin, pork shoulder, and pork sausage. You name it. You're probably hungry now. Nutritionally speaking, animal proteins are top of the line. They are nutrient dense and satiating, helping to promote less overconsumption of calories and a better body composition. Pig farmers today are raising more pork using less land, water, and energy than ever before. And the manure from the pigs is then used to fertilize next year's corn crop, all in an effort to continue to try and become more efficient. We've mentioned multiple times how before we ever came into this partnership, my personal favorite stop at the state fair every year was for a pork burger at the Pork Producers Building. And every home game against Minnesota, Kevin and his family bust out the best pork chops available. The walk-ons and pork are a match made in heaven. Put some pork on your plate today.
All right. Well, it starts with
never let the dream die, Blythe. I love that.
You get the Paulsons there, then we'll talk, all right?
Deal.
Seriously.
So now we're talking the Paulsons are going to be the – the domino that knocks over the whole pile.
Oh, yeah.
Williamsburg is going to win 47 state titles in a row because Blythe started the conglomerate.
Blythe, how much did you weigh? How much did you weigh in fourth grade? The Paulsons weighed 150.
I saw that. In fourth grade, I was in the 128-pound division.
Light.
That's still insane.
Yep.
How much? Yeah. How many gallons of milk a week did the Blythe family drink?
There's no fucking way they went through 17 gallons.
You heard that?
Dude, he said it confidently.
Okay, so it's those two, their sister, and then their parents.
Two sisters, right?
They have two sisters.
Four kids and two parents.
So there were four boys and my parents, so six. We had six as well. We went through like seven or eight.
That's what we had, and I'm like the youngest of three. No, and my two parents.
I don't know, man. I don't know.
That's so much milk.
That's more than 2 gallons a night. A day.
Yes. And he said his dad came home from work every single night with 2 gallons of milk to drink for dinner, whatever, breakfast, lunch.
If we were all home and he needed dinner, we would kill a gallon and a half, 2 gallons. No
Delete
problem.
2 gallons of milk.
That's not every night, though.
It was, evidently. I don't know.
That is insane.
You got to figure they're using a lot of milk in their cooking too, making big vats of mac and cheese.
Yeah, I suppose.
Yeah. All right, that's probably it. Yeah.
Some buttermilk pancakes.
15 pounds, I guess.
Yeah.
Fuck.
I actually got a text from a fan that was absolutely bewildered by the 17 gallons.
Bewildered.
So shout out Mike Burrows. Absolutely bewildered by the 17 gallons of milk a week.
That is a very good.
Which I'm pretty sure every fan was, but
we were.
Blythe, I saw the clip. I shared the same reaction.
Yeah, it's some of the clips we get from this show, like the Riley Moss clip of him talking about.
Did
Cooper
you see that clip, Blythe?
I didn't.
Oh, man. Riley Moss was talking about Cooper DeJean and where he went to high school. And it's some acronym name. And he goes, some OBGYN school or something. And we lost our minds.
That bitch got 70,000 views on TikTok.
There you go. You got it to the moon.
To bring it back around here and to start the wrap up of this show, you have had. You were like a three-time, four-time wrestling state champ, right?
Three-time.
Just couldn't get that fourth. Was that freshman year
tried really hard.
Was it freshman year that you didn't win it?
Yeah, I got second.
To who?
Some big giant dude.
He was late on you?
No. He went and played football at Drake, which I don't know why. Drake doesn't even have any postseason ball. But anyway, he was 6'5", full 285 at that. I mean, I was a little boy at that point, but
But you're a stud. You're a stud. You're I think you were just. Were you not just inducted into the high school Hall of Fame?
I was.
Congrats. Shout out to you.
Thank you.
Stud. Then you went on to Iowa. Don't even wrestle. You're playing football. You're playing a different sport at the Division I level. You clearly were a successful athlete. You talked about how you know your family obviously had some financial success, not because of you, you're just a little kid at that point, but you know, you come from a successful family, you know, you have a lot going for you. I'm curious, in your 30 years, and maybe it happened throughout your time at Iowa or the last 7 years in the NFL, what were some of the more challenging times for you? Like when did you really run into like serious obstacles where like there was like a fork in the road? Like, or maybe there wasn't any.
Yeah, actually, my rookie year, Kylie and I were, you know, freshly married. We both had not been living. We didn't have to go to work, go to school anywhere further away than Iowa City is to Williamsburg. And that's about 25 minutes for people who don't know. So going to Indianapolis, which is still a car's drive away. It's 5 hours in a car to get to Indianapolis. Our family could be there, all that good stuff. But it was such a shock. We got married right before my senior year, that 2015 season. We get pregnant that same season. Reed is born right as we have veteran mini camp, my rookie year. We go into camp with a 3 month old, two and a half month old kid in an extended stay hotel. It was miserable. I would not recommend for anybody to do that.
Not many people have that opportunity, by the way.
My girl's 4 months, so I know exactly what 2.5 months is.
Yeah. Yeah, right. So we're in that stage of life. I'm in a spot where my job is not secure in a very volatile job market as a seventh round pick. I had no security.
Shout out to you, by the way, for saving the Hawks in that draft, by the way.
Yeah, we already shouted them out. You mentioned that podcast.
Yeah.
Sorry. Being a fucking daddy. Yeah.
So all that, and then throughout the year, it's, you know, still no job security. I was a inactive guy for most of the year. And then to top it off, we've got a new kid. I was never around kids as a kid. I didn't grow up with anything, so I didn't know how to be a dad at that point. Like, you know, there were some rough spots for myself, for Kylie, for our family. So I think that we had to overcome a lot to continue playing, to have a successful marriage, for me to be a good parent. Kylie was always a rock star. She's always been a fantastic mother and wife and all that good stuff. But that rookie year, I was not. I just had so much change all at once, trying to make it in a career field that, you know, people wash out of, obviously at a very high rate. So that was probably like the biggest obstacle that I've ever, you know, had to deal with. And, you know, now it's just, you know, life, here we are 7 years in, or, you know, you after a 7 year career with three kids and, you know, better than ever. And just very lucky.
Reed's a little legend. He looks just like
he is. Yeah. He looks just like me, with blue eyes. You know, it's crazy. Like, you know, he's a big kid for his age. He's, I don't know, over 4 feet tall now, almost 100 pounds. And it's like, that was me. You know, I was that kid, and it's been fun. And again, another huge reason why I decided to be done when we did, and is to be more involved and active in their lives. So.
Is he trying to wrestle you yet?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Do you let him get the takedown, or you just pin his ass?
Oh yeah. I want to. So wrestling is inherently a like not fun sport.
It's horrible, dude.
Practice sucks. Competitions are awesome when you win, but when you lose, it sucks. Mm-hmm. And so I've tried to make it as fun as I can for him, because I want him to wrestle so bad. I will never tell him that.
Yeah.
But you know, obviously as a father, I'll be supportive of whatever he chooses. But if he wrestles, like, I'll do everything I can to make it as fun for him as it should be. Cause wrestling it's very rewarding. It's very fun when you win, when you have success. You get in what you put in, you get out what you put in. So it's just an ultimate, teaching tool too. So, but yeah, I let him take me down. So it's hard though, cause his arm's so short, and like, I'm just still, I need to lose weight first.
Are we planning on dropping off all the offensive linemen weight, or
I'm gonna try. So I've always kind of been.
Or we call it Pete and thinking about year eight.
No, well, I think
programs run pretty cake. It sounds.
I think I was one of the first to know that Blythe was retiring. He hit me up I don't know when, like earlier this year, and was like,
it would have been February, I think, shortly after the season. I was like, hey, you know, I think at some point I'm gonna need the exercise I've always been fine with. Like, I'll figure out how to work out and stuff. But I'm like, the eating stuff, it's like, I've never had to diet. I've never had to watch what I've eaten. So I'm like,
eat as much as you want when you're hungry.
Yeah, exactly.
He was like, Blythe hit me up. He's like, dude, I think I need like a nutrition plan. I was like, fuck, you need a nutrition plan for? Like, you're not trying to lose weight. And he goes, I am. I'm retiring. And I was like, oh, shit. Yeah. Okay.
Yep.
Isn't it hilarious that everybody hits up Kluver's fat ass for for nutrition tips, because now he's the most jacked out of any teammate ever fucking had.
He's the proof of what he's preaching. I mean, he's firsthand experience.
I would never say names on air, but there are some guys. You know that clip I play of like, everybody fucking hated Kluver, all right, when he was first in the program. Now everybody loves him. some of those guys that would fall in the category that KF was talking about when he said that, there's a lot of guys who didn't like me, never talked to me in our first 2 years on the team. I've been hit up by so many of those dudes for a workout program or help with their diet, and I never drop their name. I never say, like, oh, fucking come running back to the little annoying bitch that was in the program, huh? But it is funny now, 5 years after.
Are we talking coaches or teammates?
I've had both. I've had both. Oh, Coach Wallace hit me up for a full-on, like, plan one time.
Consultation.
And then, yeah.
And then he realized what that meant, that he couldn't have his snacks, and he decided he wasn't about it.
Dude, the coaches
does not lend itself to eating healthy. No.
Being healthy. It's so the coaches'
you're
lifestyle
around an athlete's like caloric availability. At well, all
and
times.
You're late at night watching film. I'm gonna go grab a candy bar and a pop, and
they
whatever.
Don't sleep. Yeah. Sleep is so important to your to weight control. It's crazy.
And they're traveling on the road all the time during recruiting season. Dude, the weight fluctuation every year, it's just like, okay, it's skinny season for them now. And now the season hits, it's time to get back up in
hibernation season.
Yeah, it's hibernation weight. Yeah, fuck yeah. Blythe, do you have any idea? I mean, you just said you never really had to deal with diet stuff. Do you have any clue on how many calories you were eating to maintain the size over the last 7 years?
I mean, so just, I have the Apple Watch that I wear daily, and I don't know how accurate it is, but I probably burn somewhere between 3,200 and 3,600 ish, probably just being as big as I am. And then, whatever activity I get during the day.
Yeah.
So I mean, to not be losing as much weight with the activity and workouts that I was doing, I'd probably eat at least 3,500 calories every day.
I would put you.
It was more than that. 6,000.
It was probably closer to 5,500. Like, yeah.
At the very minimum, like at the heavy training days, I was probably burning 5,000 to 6,000 calories.
Yeah.
Like if you have a hard camp day, like plus water weight, good stuff.
Yeah. Linemen always fascinate me because it's just now when I think back about some of the guys you played with, any of the linemen that were there, just watching them eat like so much throughout the day. I mean, some of those guys eat like 6,000, 7,000, 8,000 calories a day. It's wild, man.
Oh, luckily, all the fluids that they would intake would be more impressive.
Were you a guy that fluctuated a lot with your weight in those hot practices where you'd go down like 10 pounds of sweat?
Yeah, not every day though. That was like I was always like a 6-7 ish type guy, and if I hit that number, it was a bad day. Like in terms of long practice, you had to do 9-on-7 friggin' twice. You had to do blocks twice. You had to start. Those were the type of days where I'd lose 10. But I've always been.
Give us the KF impersonation of we got to start all over.
I'm not as good as you guys. I would just butcher. I wouldn't. I'd go on like I'd be a meme after that, but
fucking no fucking start it again.
There was one.
What the fuck are we doing?
The worst day for that in my career. We were in Kinnick. It was prior to the indoor being done. KF had just talked in a team meeting about guys wearing. We were just in helmets, and then the spiders. So
this would have been your freshman year, then, huh?
It probably would have been. I think. It would have been our third year, I think, because
the indoor was done when we got there in 2013.
Yeah. Was it?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So, okay.
The rest of the facility was not, but the indoor was.
Yeah. Okay. So the outside, the fields weren't ready yet.
No.
Okay.
Like when you guys converted them
for a time, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think it was still – it would have been – I think when Nolan McMillan was still on the team, did you guys –
That was our true freshman year.
Yeah, okay. So it was the fall of 13. You guys remember this probably. Guys were not wearing their spiders when they were supposed to be.
And I remember this.
We were doing 9-on-7. We were doing blocks. And guys weren't wearing their protective stuff. And KF and the team meeting is like, we got guys not wearing their stuff. Like, we got to wear them, blah, blah, blah. We go out to practice that same day. We get through individual. We get through, I think, one more.
Fuck, I do remember this. We were in Kinnick.
It was not good.
Individual. we get to like pass individual.
We were like a quarter of the way through the practice.
Go back. Anybody who doesn't have their stuff in, go get that shit on. We started stretch over.
Oh, we did individual the again. Entire practice back from the beginning. I forgot about that.
I remember it. And Casey was so fucking pissed because I'm a specialist, dude. Why am I wearing the fucking shells, right?
For sure.
And this is a reason why people hated me.
That's just the principle of Iowa football. You know,
like, Kluver, were you guilty?
Guilty. Had to run back up.
You motherfucker.
I didn't touch people in practice. Why would I wear those?
That's just the principle of it, Klu. Come on.
Yeah.
That's
I know.
The head coach tells you to eat shit off the ground, you eat it, all right?
Hey, but we know what kind of guy I was in 2013. I wasn't a guy of principle.
Previously established, you're one of those fuckers that everyone hated.
Yeah.
So it is what it is. Blythe, I remember one more before we let you go here. There was a time, this would have been 14 or 15, where we had to run hundreds.
That was spring of 2015.
You know what I'm talking about?
Right before my senior year.
Were you walking them like out of spite? Were you like, I remember you jawing back and forth with the coaches at this point. Like, I was like, oh fuck. Like,
yeah, because we were fighting.
Everybody thought I was, but this is so even Doyle, Doyle hated, I was in Doyle's doghouse after this, like hated me.
I didn't know what happened.
I couldn't do anything right leading up to, so that was spring ball. I couldn't do anything leading up to our May testing. I couldn't do anything right coming back for summer workouts. Like, I had to re-earn kind of like,
senior respect.
Yeah. And it was not intentional. It was a fight that caused us to start running those. And I'd never run more than the cut 85s in my life. Like, and that's just a, so you cut, you do your cuts and you do your 55. That's the longest I've ever ran in my life. I would never, that's the longest sprint I've ever done in my life. Prior to that, running those, though, there was a fight. This is like the first fight of my entire career that I actually get in on. I would not throw on punches, but I'm trying to pull guys off. Like, I'm tired, like, after that. And Kev was like, get him on the line. Guy, I'm trying to take my knee braces off. We had to run in knee braces, helmets strapped up, gloves taped. If your elbows were taped up, like, we had to run in everything. I was dead-ass tired. That's the only reason that I was trying to run harder. I was. And nobody thought that.
I thought you were doing it on purpose, dude.
No.
Like, fuck these coaches. I'm going slow.
No. Nope.
And I knew you weren't that kind of guy. I'll never forget that because we were in the specialists were in the indoor because that's where we had space to kick and stuff.
Yeah.
And I think Joel was still there at this time. He's like,
yep,
he's like, specialist, get the fuck out there. Get the – and I'm like, oh, no. What the fuck happened? People are lining up, and we're just looking at each other like, oh, we're fucked. Dude, the special – I hadn't – we do warm-up,
I don't even know if it was that – like, we were almost done with practice.
Almost and done.
I don't think we ended up – I think it was like the last – because it was like a scrimmage. It was like one-on-ones because I remember Desmond was the – one of the main subjects, and then I think Boone Myers was.
Wow, real big shocker here.
Right, yeah. Right. So, but I don't even know if we ended up running that many sprints, but I was dead ass tired.
Dude.
I mean, it was bad.
I'll never forget it. The specialist had been inside, our muscles had been cold for 90 minutes.
And I think it was like, towards the end of spring ball, too, like one of the last practices, too.
Dude, I was so fucking pissed, man. I was just like, all right. Yeah. Here we go. I'll never forget that. That's the one story from like practice that I remember Blythe being involved in.
Yeah. I mean, it was so bad. Like after that, you know, I'm doing the lifting. I'm in a lift group and I always lifted, you know, on the long racks, the row that had the most racks on it.
Yep.
On the I was wall. Always towards the end. The older guys were on that end, whatever, towards the end, the indoor end.
Yep.
I was always one of those last racks, you know. At the time, I was probably one of the longest, took the longest times to lift towards the end of my college career. And at that point, people were still lifting towards the middle of that row. People between those folks and then myself, who was still lifting, doing the lifts in the rack, people in between us had gotten done. Doyle comes over, he's like, what are you doing? You just you think you can you big shot lift on your own, just away from everybody, not lift with your teammates? And I'm like, it was like, whoa.
Is he not the best at just creating a story? And now, yes. And now you're like, oh fuck.
I was in the biggest doghouse ever for just obviously just a total misunderstanding.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been there.
Wild stuff.
Fun story to remember, though.
Yeah. You boys got anything else?
Thoroughly.
How's our guy Corbin doing?
Corbin's doing great. He's living the life and down in Arizona, so I don't think he's coming back anytime soon. All right.
That's where Drake is.
The place to be.
Hey, are you? Who's all going to Sean's wedding here in a couple a month?
I'll see you there.
Month and a half, 2 months.
Yeah, I'll see you there.
I will not be.
Yeah, good stuff.
Unfortunately, I won't either. Got to go to Bo's, and then we got to go to Vegas for a wedding.
Okay. You guys are all in that time of your lives. All your friends getting married.
Bro, I've been getting smashed with weddings, dude. I got invited to 12 last year.
Yeah, I believe it.
Well, Kev, you're a big wedding guy, though. You pull those invites.
Well, you know,
somebody's got to do it.
You can't
go to all
performances every other week.
I don't know. Well, you know, the best don't take games off, right?
Man, you can't take games off in the NFL, right? But when you have an MLB like schedule, sometimes you got to game.
You're on a 5-day rotation. You're in the.
It's a lot of bendies.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
I think the next couple of years, pretty much all of our age guys are gonna get hitched up here, except for Drake, because I don't know what his deal is.
Now, you know, just a slower starter, man.
Takes a while to get going. I don't know if they introduced you to G-Bone at the front end of this podcast.
Oh, shit. G-Bone. I'm sorry. I did it again. G-Bone, get in here.
He's our producer. He's a student at Iowa right now.
What's going on, Austin?
You've just been listening to this whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I hang out in case I'm needed.
You know,
he
could have told Drake that you didn't win a Super Bowl, but, you know, Drake didn't ask.
It's Grant's fault, huh?
Yeah. Grant, do you have any questions?
These guys better pay you.
I get paid in a cool trip to Nashville. So
okay, all right.
That's how I get paid. But I do have a couple questions for you, though, Austin.
Yeah.
So I listened back to the first time you were on the show. And Drake introduced you as the godfather to his degeneracy. And I was curious if you could expand on that a little bit.
Do you remember this story?
Yeah. I mean, I would assume it's from gambling.
From Jacksonville.
You'd assume correctly.
Yes.
Bring this story up, but we were running out of time. So I just
you guys went on the boat, didn't you?
And missed curfew.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
Oh, fuck.
And like, I thought I was dead, but I knew I was with Blythe, so I'm like, I'm gonna survive.
It was me and Weissman. We were like the two that were like, hey, we're good. The boat was delayed, blah 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 blah, whatever, you know. And yeah, we were good. That's right.
Shit.
I forgot you were on that trip, but yeah, there was like a handful. Louis Trinket-Passat.
Yep.
Who else was on that trip?
I don't remember, but I remember that was the first time Louis ever liked me. Because Louis was a tough cookie to crumble there for a while.
Talk about a 180. Louis, he's 140 pounds, and like I don't think there's a mean bone in his body now. He's all about Jesus.
Yep.
Crazy.
Good for him.
That's the story, Grant. The bull trips get a little rowdy in the first couple days.
Oh, cool.
A bunch of per diem to gamble with, so we went offshores.
Yeah, and it was not good for my per diem. I know that.
No, you never went on the boat, man.
I lost $50 or something like that. But
fair enough. And then this is good that Cleary's here. I've always wondered this. I've never put it down a football before, but I've always wondered: do centers have any beef with like long snappers?
No, I don't. I've never had any beef with long. Maybe Cleaver in particular, but no one else.
Blythe didn't even know I was on the team. They do get a bad name though, a little bit. And I feel bad because when you tell a person who doesn't know anything about football that you're a long snapper, that you snap it, they automatically assume, oh, you're the center.
Yep.
And then you have to tell them, no, No, they play a lot more than me, and they're much they're much bigger and stronger. I come in sometimes.
I would argue though that you have a more critical job. Obviously, like there's more. Listen. Who was the guy that sailed in a college game, bowl game this year, that sailed however many over the guy's head?
I will say this.
That was a guaranteed loss after he did that. You're right.
I mean,
I will say this. If it's by play, like per capita of play, there's more riding every time I go out on the field than if like you botch a snap. It's like, cool, second down and 12.
I feel like there's way more margin for error play, like snapping center than there is.
Yeah, I mean,
it's like hitting driver versus wedge.
Yeah.
There's, right. I'll say it all the time, and I'll say it until the end of time. When special teams goes out there, right? The specialists are much closer to fucking the entire game up than you think they are. it is much closer.
No doubt. There's a huge stat to your point, Klub. There's a huge stat that if you have a negative play on special teams, your chances of winning the game go down significantly.
Yeah, they tried to minimize those.
Yep.
Tried to. Was tough for a while. Cornbrath, Dylan Kidd, fucking Kaluzi. I mean, what are we doing? Huh? But yeah, no, it's there's no beef. I like the center.
Cool.
That's good. Yeah.
You better. Same. You get beat up if you didn't. Stuff you in your shoe locker, you little weirdo.
That's true. Blythe, I appreciate you coming on, man.
Yeah,
thanks for having me, Blythe. Man. You know, maybe in another 300 episodes we can do it again.
No, we'll bring you on before that.
We're running out of content to talk about, so we
know you're not
relying guests even heavier these days.
At some point, we're just gonna have a rotation of like 20 guests, and it's gonna be every 5 months we just keep bringing you on.
No, this is great. You guys are doing a great job. I'm proud of how you guys have taken it.
People keep saying that. I'm fucking a little confused, but thank you very much.
I think you tweeted the other day. You're doing your athletic training stuff and working from home because of this, right? Partly because of this.
Yeah, half and half.
There you go. Yeah,
it is dope. I never thought that we'd be in this position. So, appreciate you coming on. Awesome, Blythe. Yeah. Episode whatever the fuck it is, and we'll talk to you guys next time. Peace.
Appreciate you.
Hey, thanks for listening to the show. If you want more, you can check us out on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube by searching Washed Up Walk-Ons. And if you're interested in supporting the show, head over to patreon.com/washedupwalkons where you can find bonus podcasts, merchandise, and other cool perks. Best part, half of your subscription benefits the kids at UI Children's Hospital. We'll see you next time. Hawks by a million.